Welcome to those listening online. I can see we've got plenty of visitors here tonight, but I'll just call out Paul and Paula from Gosford, and thank you, Paul, for coming to do the talk for us tonight. So tonight we're going to start a series, a study group on the greatest mission, and we will be considering tonight, as it says on the slide, my salvation to the ends of the earth. We'll now hear from our brother Paul on the subject, my salvation to the ends of the earth, at the start of this series, and I'll come up later to do the reading when he needs it. Thanks.
It's really good. Thanks for having us. Lovely to be here. So it's, you know what dawns on me when I travel and do this sort of thing is how special our family is. Like all the faces that we know and new people that we get to meet, it's such an amazing thing the family have in the truth. And it's, my heart goes out to you guys. There's a lot of really heavy things happening and with people in people's lives, and it's the groaning of life, isn't it? And it says in Romans 8 that we groan as well. And where would you be without this? Where would you be without this stuff? I want to start off this series by introducing you to a Japanese word, and some of you guys have heard this before. Does anyone know what that word means? Ikigai. Are you fluent in Japanese, Em? Yeah, there is a book called Ikigai. Actually, I was at the airport the other day. Okay, so what does it mean? Is that what it means? Okay. I have never thought of that. That's fantastic. All right, it means the reason for your the life purpose, your reason for living. Okay, why are we even on this planet? What is our ikigai? And I find this such a cool word because we need to think about what is our ikigai. And of course, in the scriptures, we're told what our ikigai is, because in Romans 8, it says we're on this planet for one thing, and that is to be conformed to the image of Jesus Christ. And that, you know, the word conform means in the Greek to be shaped or fashioned, to look similar to. And we can talk about what that means, you know, like in our personal development, that we try and become more like Jesus in our characteristics. That's one aspect of it. You know, you get constant metaphors. This is a massive subject in the Bible. All these metaphors of, and I'll try and remember what these are, like, you know, being a new creation, being born again, you know, being resurrected to a new life, looking at yourself in the mirror and trying to see more of Jesus every day, being imitators, being getting rid of being slaves to sin and becoming slaves to righteousness, how Christ dwells in your heart. He finds a home in us. What's this one here? Yeah, transformational metamorphosis. This concept of metamorphosis. And then we've got this renovation of our hearts, following in the footsteps of Jesus. Illumination. The Bible's full of it. My personal favorite, where you're going to eat Jesus and drink his blood. We become cannibals in a sense. You know, that's the metaphor in John 6. And putting on Jesus like a garment, like so people see Jesus when we walk around. They're the metaphors that the Bible pounds into us all the time. And as I said, that you know, we develop, hopefully we're looking at becoming more loving, more compassionate, more humble as we try and conform to the image of Jesus. But there's also what we want to focus on in these talks is being conformed to Jesus' mission. What was his mission? What was his ikigai when he was on the planet? And Jesus describes his mission. If you think about the very first words that Jesus says when he was, when he was lost in the temple, what was it? He was about 12 years old or something. And they say, "What are you doing?" And he says, "Don't you know I've got to be about my Father's business?" What an awesome statement that is. I've got to be about my Father's business. And then the very first speech that he gives in that synagogue in Nazareth in Luke 4, he says, I've come to preach, to heal, to set free people at liberty. And he pulls out that Isaiah scroll and quotes from Isaiah 61. And there was a literal aspect of that. There's also mainly metaphorical, where he's trying to get people to see, be set free from sin and death. So there are his first words. But then when you think about it, if you remember when he was resurrected and he's with the disciples on the Mount of Olives before he ascended to heaven. Remember this in Acts 1? He spent 40 days talking to them. What did he spend 40 days talking to them about? Do you remember? Constantly he was talking to them about the kingdom of God. And the disciples, do you remember the story? The disciples are hearing all this and they were so fixed on when is it going to happen? When is this kingdom? And Jesus essentially says in Acts 1, he says, I don't want you to worry about the when. Don't focus on that. I want you to focus on being my witnesses to the end of the earth. I think that's really powerful, isn't it? Because we, and rightly so, we look at world current events and we look at what's happening in Israel and Russia and so on, and we try and get a sense of when Christ might return, and that's all great. But Jesus is emphasizing in his last words when he was on the planet that we're going to be witnesses to the ends of the earth. So what we might do is just actually have that reading. I'd like to read from Isaiah 49. And verse 1-9, and it really highlights Jesus' mission. So
all right, reading together with you from Isaiah chapter 49, verses 1-9, and we're reading in the New King James Version. Listen, O coastlands, to me, and take heed, you peoples from afar. Yahweh hath called me from the womb, from the matrix of my mother. He has made mention of my name. And he has made my mouth like a sharp sword. In the shallow of his hand he has hidden me and made me a polished shaft. In his quiver he has hidden me. And he said to me, You are my servant, O Israel, in whom I will be glorified. Then I said, I have laboured in vain. I have spent my strength for nothing, and in vain, yet surely my just reward is with Yahweh, and my work with my God. And now Yahweh says, Who formed me from the womb to be his servant, to bring Jacob back to him, so that Israel is gathered to him? For I shall be glorious in the eyes of Yahweh, and my God shall be my strength. Indeed, he says, It is too small a thing that you should be my servant, to raise up the tribes of Jacob, and to restore the preserved ones of Israel. I will also give you as a light to the Gentiles, that you should be my salvation to the ends of the earth. Thus saith Yahweh, the Redeemer of Israel, their Holy One, to him whom man despises, to him who the nation abhors, to the servant of rulers, kings shall see and arise, princes also shall worship, because of Yahweh who is faithful, the Holy One of Israel, and he has chosen you. Thus saith Yahweh, In an acceptable time I have heard you, and in the day of salvation I have helped you. I will preserve you and give you as a covenant to the people, to restore the earth, to cause them to inherit the desolate heritages. And that's that you may say to the prisoners, Go forth, to those who are in darkness, show yourselves. They shall feed along the roads, and their pastures shall be on all desolate heights. They shall neither hunger nor thirst.
Yeah, that's a really powerful prophecy that You know, this concept of the servant. In, you know, in verse 3, he talks about how Israel's his servant in whom he would be glorified. But then they were this failed servant. And then he starts talking about forming another servant, which is obviously Jesus Christ. And he says in verse 6, it's too small a thing for you just to talk to the people of Israel? And he goes on and he says, I'm going to give you as a light to the Gentiles that you should be my salvation to the ends of the earth. I love that. That's where our theme comes from. So this whole concept of Jesus becoming the salvation to the ends of the earth, shining the light in the darkness, talking to the prisoners that are trapped in this concept of sin and death, and giving them freedom. And why this is so important is that if you come across to Acts 13, this is actually quoted. Paul and Barnabas quote this Isaiah in a speech that they talk to the Jews in Antioch. So it's in Acts 13. And we're going to read, let's just read verse 42 for a sec. So here's Paul and Barnabas. So they're preaching away. It says in verse 42 of Acts 13, so when the Jews went out of the synagogue, the Gentiles begged that these words might be preached to them the next Sabbath. And when the congregation had broken up, many of the Jews and devout proselytes followed Paul and Barnabas, who, speaking to them, persuaded them to continue in the grace of God. On the next Sabbath, almost the whole city came together to hear the word of God. And when the Jews saw the multitudes, they were filled with envy and contradicting and blaspheming. They opposed the things spoken by Paul. Then Paul and Barnabas grew bold and said, it was necessary that the word of God should be spoken to you first, but since you reject it and judge yourselves unworthy of everlasting life, behold, we turn to the Gentiles. And this is where he quotes from Isaiah. He says, for the Lord so has commanded us, I have set you as a light to the Gentiles, that you should be for salvation to the ends of the earth. Do you see what's happened here? In Isaiah, it's a prophecy about Jesus, and Paul and Barnabas apply it to them. It's not just Jesus Christ. With our ikigai, our purpose, our reason for living is to be conformed to his image and his mission in being that light and salvation to the ends of the earth, just as he was. So you get all these, you do get, you're talking about metaphors, you get all these metaphors that apply to Jesus as well as us. So Jesus is called the light of the world. And so we're asked to be the light of the world. Jesus is the sower of a seed. It talks about us as being a sower and planting seeds. Jesus is the Lord of a harvest, so we're his laborers, fishers of men, and so on. So there's this emphasis. And when we talk about in the Gospels, it's quite interesting because if you're really a true disciple, in the Gospels, it talks about there's these bookends of discipleship. And you remember the story when the disciples were first called. Jesus says, I want to make you fishers of men. The very first calling. And then at the end, he says to them, I now want you to spread the gospel to the world. It's a similar concept. But John's really interesting, isn't it? John doesn't actually say that. He finishes with a story which is exactly the same as when they were first called. So there's these bookends, and it's the same kind of concept. And in John 21, he says, I want you to follow me. Keep being fishers of men. And exactly the same story. The miraculous haul of fishes happens in John 21 as it did when they were first called to the gospel or to follow Christ. I mean, when you think about it, this concept is a continuation of God's purpose with creation, isn't it? You know, in the beginning, Adam and Eve were created to be, to go out to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth in the natural creation. And in the spiritual creation, who we are, as followers of Jesus, there's this concept of these metaphors of growth and fruit. But There's also this concept of being fruitful and multiplying. In Matthew 13, you've got the sower. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, I planted, Apollos watered. And in Timothy, he says, preach the gospel, be in season and out of season. This is all those sort of language around fruit and, you know, growing seed. So what I want to do this weekend is I don't want to talk about, you know, your preaching activities in your ecclesia. I mean, as good as that is, whatever seminars and lectures and stuff you organise together. I want you to start thinking with me about when we walk out that door every day, when we walk out that front door, people that come into our circle of influence, how do we impact them? How do we shine a light? Because when you think about it, you and I have got something to say about, you know, the beautiful creation and how there's a creator behind it, for example. We've got something to say when you look at the mess that this world is in, with all the wars and the chaos that is happening in the world. We've got something to say about how it is going to be better when Jesus returns. We've got something to say about why there's suffering in the world and what the point of all that is. We've got something to say about the values of God, and when you follow the morality of God and the trying to live with integrity according to his principles, there is often blessings that come with that. That's the byproduct of it. We've got something to say about sin and how we're all flawed and we're all failures, but there is God's love and we have this relief of forgiveness. We have this grace that covers us, and that's so comforting. We've got something to say about, you know, the short dance of life. And how, you know, Ecclesiastes says that we're on this like little stage of life, and you jump on it and you dance around and you do all these things and then you drop off. We've got something to say about what we can do to live forever. We've got something to say about the blessings you have, about your community and how special our family is. You've got something to say, we have got something to say about the incredible truths of the Bible that help us see clearly where we're not confused with teachings like the Trinity and so on. So we've got something to say about all of this. You know, I work in the emergency services. I've been a firefighter in Fire Rescue New South Wales for 27 years now. That's longer than some of you guys have been alive. And I'm like this old veteran, crusty fireman. And, you know, in the fire service, I suppose any emergency service, we have this thing called a duty of care. And every day I go to work, the days I go to work, we have a routine where we check all our equipment and we make sure our gear is working properly. And at a moment's notice, when the alarms go off, we need to be ready. And I did a stint in Victoria. Remember they had a massive mines fire in Victoria? It was years ago now. Anyway, a lot of the fire trucks from Victoria were tied up at these mines fires. They sent firefighters down from Sydney. And I remember their turnout system there because they had a countdown of 90 seconds. So whenever you got called, it kept telling you, 90 seconds, 45 seconds. Talking about pressure. So they were in Victoria, it was about being on that truck and out the door in 90 seconds. And it's, you know, you could be in the shower, you could be just cooked a big lamb roast with all the crew and just to be able to enjoy that, and you get a call and we've got to go. But you're out the door. That's you have this duty of care. So there's this, when you look at the Apostle Paul, he had this like duty of care mindset. He said, in Romans 11, he says, if by any means I will save some. In 1 Corinthians 9, he says, I become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. And that resonates with me, because if we have a serious call where we have someone, the call is a house fire with persons reported, that's hectic. Our adrenaline is through the roof, and we will do anything to get in there to get that life. That's a very real thing. And this is what Paul is on about. He says it's a matter of life and death talking to people. And so I think it's such an important thing to have. Walk out the door with this mindset of, I've got to be about my Father's business. It doesn't matter how old you are, what you do, everybody can do this. This is about being proactive, where we start the day with that mindset. And I've got to be honest with you, I've been looking at this subject for a while, and some days I just walk out and I still forget. So I've got a sign at the bottom of our stairwell to remind me, and I don't always look at it, but this concept of glowing in the dark. You know, walking out the door and looking for opportunities to say something. You know, probably their most recent baptism up on the Central Coast was a lady that went to a pathology place to get her bloods done. And there was a sister that was doing the pathology, taking blood. And they had this conversation, and that conversation started, well, what are you doing? I'm going out to lunch after this. And the lady said to her, what are you going to do? And she said, I'm going down to read my book. And she said, well, what book's that? And then it was just a little statement. I'm going to read my book. That whole story continued, and she ended up getting baptized. I have been experimenting with different signs on the back of my car. This is a feel in the early days. I honor King who can save you and will save the world. And I have a funny scenario where I had that right across the back of the car. And Paula put the back windscreen wiper on and wiped on. And I drove into my fire station with that. And the guys are looking at me going, yeah, right, you're going to save the world, eh? So I've learned to sort of adjust it. So little things like that, to, you know, cryptic car signs. The one I've got at the moment is it time to see what he has done? And I've just got a little cross there, so they know it's a Christian comment. Is it time? So, you know, like, it's, I'm just looking for a response. I read a book a while ago called The 10-Second Rule. I don't know if anyone's read it. It's quite a cool book where you are looking for opportunities, and within 10 seconds you see an opportunity, you do something based on how you feel. So you might be standing in a supermarket, and there's a single mother there with all the children trying to pay for stuff, and this guy in this book just has this intuitive sort of thing and pays for her, and she goes, oh, that's fantastic. You know, little things like that show acts of kindness, which could provoke a conversation. You know, what's that statement? It says the first Bible people read is you. I think it was a Bob Lloyd statement where he said they observed how he was, and they asked him, why are you like this? And he doesn't give a straight answer. He just says, it's the book I read. It's a little bit cryptic. That's cool. That's, you know, to provoke conversation. So we're talking about being proactive and innovative, to see the desperate need to be by any and all means. Actually, I was with my nephew recently, and we were talking about some of this stuff, and he made this very profound comment. And the comment was, we know exactly how effective the things we don't do are. Pretty profound, isn't it? We know exactly how effective the things we don't do are. You're never going to impact someone if we don't do anything. There is this warning as well, and this is a huge responsibility. We have a warning in the scriptures. If we choose to hide our light under a bushel, If we choose to not speak up when we have opportunity, we're like the wicked servant. He was told to do business till I come. And he just hid it in the earth. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 9, "Woe is me if I preach not the gospel. Whoever denies me before men, him I also will deny." Now this is pretty serious stuff. And look, no one's saying this is easy. You know, I'm a pretty extroverted sort of guy, and I still find it really hard. And you know, I've got it's not easy because we live, as it says in Philippians 2, we're shining a light amongst a crooked and perverse generation. So we are so different. We are so weird and extreme. We're the odd person out to a lot of people. And I think, you know, in my workplace, I reflect on the crews that I've had over the years. And in some of those early years, I had a very heavy anti-Christian malicious crew. It was really heavy going. And I found it so hard to go to work and for them to know that I was that Christian guy. And I would get mocked. And I had an incident where I went to a car accident where there was a fatality where a concrete truck smashed into another car head on. And the guy was dead inside, bleeding and so on. And I was on one side of the car and this other guy was on the other side of the car. We were discussing about how to chop things away to get the body out when he needed to come out. And this incident happened outside a Christian Life Center, big church. And I'll never forget this. He looked across this dead guy's face to me, and he looked at me with this evil glare, and he said, pointed at the Christian Life Center, he said, "This has got to test your faith, mate." And I remember thinking, I don't know where I'd be without it. But that was a heavy period for me, where it was malicious. And it was pretty difficult. But since then I've had some great crews, and you know, there's good hearted banter that happens. You know, I get nicknames like the Preacher or Halo is my, you know, latest one. And even with the good guys, it's still awkward, isn't it? So you do have to have courage. And Jesus says, don't cover your light, let it shine. I'll always remember, this happened about 38 years ago. I was at a train station in Hurstville in Sydney. And I remember this young kid coming up to me. I was on my way to somewhere. And he came up to me. He was really young, probably 7, 8, 18. And he was literally shaking with nervousness. And he says, "I want to invite you to a Bible study class." I think he was a Church of Christ guy. And that picture has always stuck in my mind because I always thought about his courage. He was so stressed, but he's still willing to actually invite me. I love this verse in Romans 1. Paul says, "So as much as in me, I am ready or eager to preach the gospel to you who are in Rome also. I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation for everyone who believes, the Jew first and also the Greek." So we do have to have courage. It's not an easy mission to be conformed to Christ's mission in shining that light. But, you know, there's another reason why it's tough and it's not easy. And that's because often the response you have are few and far between. When I had a brother recently, you know, saying to me, "I just want results." But I think we've got to be in this headspace that it's okay if people don't respond. You know, the whole story of Noah, that 120 years, it says that he was the preacher of righteousness. How many did he really impact? And so I think, you know, whilst we can be that light, we've got to discipline our disappointments. You know, those signs I was telling about, I had I drove home from work the other day in the rain and I broke down on the M1 freeway. And I haven't really had anyone comment on my sign for 3 years. I broke down on this M1 freeway and the road traffic management truck comes along with the red and blue flashing lights. The guy pulls up in the pouring rain and we both get out and we meet. And the first thing he says to me, he says, "Mate, are you a Christian?" And I went, "Well, how do you know that?" He says, "Well, you're signed, mate." And I went, "Oh, yeah, but signed." And so we had this conversation and turns out he's just become a Christian. So we had, but he was like hungry for knowledge and understanding. And I went, "This is fantastic." You know, I said, "Mate, I've got to give us your number. I'll send you some stuff." And in the end, I end up saying, "Do you want to meet for coffee?" And we're still trying to organize that. But you know, after 3 years, not really anyone. I had a few funny comments, but that was the first time something serious really happened with that. If I didn't have that on my car, it would never have happened. So it is tough when we have rare responses, but sometimes it happens. Just as we bring this to a close, I want you to think about this. The Lord Jesus is so intently interested in what you're doing in your with your circle of influence. Remember in the story of Stephen where Stephen's stoned to death and Stephen looks up and he sees Jesus not sitting but standing. To me, I've always taken that as a picture of Jesus was so intently interested in his saints, his workers, his beloved. He was so intently interested. And we know that there's, in Luke 15, it talks about how there's joy in heaven over one sinner that repents. So do you think Jesus Christ is intently interested in what you're doing? Of course he is. When you make a conversation, when you make a comment, he is there going, "This is fantastic." Because that's what he wants us to be like. That's because he's so interested because we're conforming to his mission. And he sees himself in us. You know, when Jesus died on the cross, it said, "Into thy hands I commit my spirit." Remember that? You know, and I guess what he meant by that was that he's handing back his energy and his life to God. But I feel that's also his commending his life to God and said, "This is what I've done. I commend my spirit." A life of saving people, of trying to impact people for the gospel and salvation. That was his ikigai. Years ago, I saw a Christian phrase which I've never forgotten. And it was a challenging phrase which went, "Are you a fan or a follower?" Do you know what the difference is between the two? A fan is someone that looks at what someone like Jesus did and goes, "You know what? That's so noble and admirable. And I'll applaud from the sideline, but I could never do that." Whereas a follower will follow and try and be conformed to that ikigai. And when we meet Jesus, we want to have that conversation with him, where we say to him, "My ikigai, my life was inspired by you. Because you inspired me to fish, shine a light, sow a seed, to be about my Father's business, and to set people free. And it was an honor to conform to you and this greatest mission." Sorry, there's that. I forgot about this slide where Jesus looks at how beautiful our feet are when we're preaching. So that's another one. So we'll just leave it there for now.